Howdy, all. This is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast, episode 5. Today, I'll be joined by guitar connoisseur Ross Helmont, who is a professional guitar teacher. He also has worked with beginners, intermediate players, and he also teaches professionals how to learn and apply theory to their playing, as well as lots of other things, including breaking bad habits. We're going to go over a whole bunch of different things with Ross, and it should be a lot of fun and insightful too, because I know for myself, I get in bad habits when I play, and that's one thing that I want to ask him about is what's his approach to maybe breaking these habits, as well as applying theory, and does applying theory sometimes inhibit your actual guitar playing, or does it do nothing but make it more musical? So we're going to get into those topics with him, and he'll be with us very, very soon. A big thanks for all those who have tuned in to the podcast over the last few episodes. I really appreciate it. If you'd like to listen to the whole episode, head over to iTunes and just punch in the Blues under podcasts and it will come up. Otherwise, you can listen from my website at guitarpedaldemos.com. We're going to go ahead and give Ross a call and get him on the line. So I'm joined now with Ross Helmont from rosshelmont.com.au. He's one of my favorite guitar players in Melbourne, and he's also a professional guitar teacher as well. So how are you today, Ross?
Yeah, terrific. Thanks, Shane. Thanks for asking. How's yourself?
Yeah, doing well. Thanks. And thanks for being the second guest on the podcast. I appreciate your time.
No problems there.
Now, we had a list of some cool things to have a chat about today, and one of which I have to dive into straight away because I get asked for tabs more than any other question or comment I get is, do you have a tab for that particular lick? And I always say no.
Yeah.
One of the things that you mentioned is why tab is evil, and that intrigued me, so I thought I'd let you explain that.
Yeah, I see the same stuff a lot on YouTube and things like that, and why I don't do tab stuff, and some guys get a bit upset with me about it, but music's about hearing. It's about listening to things, and so all of the really, really good players, how they've got to be really good players by listening and working things out. Now, it's not that important that you get it right. It's just important that you actually start the process. Mm-hmm. In fact, some of the really great music that's been made by people is by actually making stuff-ups when they've been listening to something, and it ends up being part of their style. I mean, I think a classic example is Danny Gatton, where he plays this sort of crazy fast sort of lick that he got from Les Paul.
Yeah,
he didn't realize for so long that Les Paul actually multi-tracked that.
So nice.
So he's wondering how in the hell he got it. And so Danny worked out how to play it, but he played it his own way, which wasn't multi-tracked at all. So, you know, sometimes some really great licks and good things come out of just by listening and working things out. Another prime example, I think Elvis Costello talked about his songwriting, and he'd written a song in the style of Burt Bacharach before he'd met Burt. And anyway, he finally met Burt, and they did an album at some stage. But before that, he met him in the studio and said, "Oh, come and have a listen to this song." And Burt goes, "Yeah, that's really good." You know, he said, "Does it remind you of anyone?" "No." What do you mean?" He said, "I'm supposed to. It's supposed to be like you." He said, "Oh, yeah, okay." The thing is, the point is, he got a style and got a way of playing by doing that. Now, getting back to my point on the playing side of things, you know, I see this on YouTube and stuff, people's comments, "Oh, can you send me a tab on that? Can you send me a tab on it?" You know, yep. It drives me a bit batty because a lot of the time the guys that have worked stuff out anyway don't have it totally right, so there's no guarantee the tab's right in the first place.
Yep, I totally agree.
because it's about hearing and listening, you're actually doing yourself a real disservice by not having an attempt or having a go at working it out yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some good slow downer programs around these days. So, you know, it's not like the good old days where we used to have LP records and you'd put a coin on the stylus to try and slow it down, and then it would be in a different key and all that sort of thing. Now you don't have an excuse for not having a go at working stuff out. So all you're doing is doing yourself a big disservice by not trying that and just trying to work things out. Because when you do that, you actually listen and you start to get the phrasing and the nuance of what the person's playing.
And absolutely.
And the more you do it, the better you get at it. And you develop your ear. So people often say, "How do I develop my ear?" Well, you develop your ear by listening to stuff and working things out. So You know, to me, tab is that. That's why I say, you know, tab is evil. It's actually taking away your ability to learn properly.
And it can also make things more complicated as well. I remember I learnt Sultans of Swing a long time ago, and I learnt the first, you know, first couple of licks from the intro a particular way from a tab. And not only was it not right, it was just the way it was written out made the licks way harder than they actually could have been if I just moved them back somewhere or forward. Can't remember exactly right, but where what happened. But I showed Khaled, and he's like, "No, I play it here. It's like 10 times easier." I was like, "Wow, this is great."
Well, that one in particular, I mean, once you just realize it's just a D minor chord, a bar chord, and the fifth fret, basically, and then you're off and running, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
A guy came in actually one time for a lesson with me, and he played a version of what was it, the Led Zeppelin thing, Stairway to Heaven, right, the intro. Yeah. And it was all broken. It was all, like, I mean, the notes were all broken up and not played. They didn't flow smoothly.
Yep.
I said, "Where did you get that?" He said, "Oh, off a tab." And so he I mean, look, when you're doing a tab, you're obviously better off listening to the piece properly and getting the nuance from that, but you don't get right inside it until you actually try and work out exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Now, you can also, you're also lucky now you've got a lot of video too, because sometimes you don't know where the guy's playing it. Because, you know, on guitar, you've got a lot of different spots you can play something. But at least you can reference the video a bit and say, "Oh, okay, he's playing up around the 10th fret, you know, so I can start playing up there and try and figure it out."
Yeah, that's how I learned the majority of what I know, was watching DVDs of, you know, guys playing and just listening and working out what I could at any particular point of development and not going beyond it. I felt like any time I pushed myself too far, or if I listened to something and I couldn't quite work it out and I could find a video on it, it always made it a lot easier to learn. That's been a huge help for me over the years, just having a visual aid as well as
I think the visual aid's really good, mate. I think it's really helpful. It sort of reminds me back in the good old days before we had a lot of this information. A lot of the players, you know, learnt to play from passing ideas around, you know, sitting around the campfire or whatever. Like the old gypsy players would pass the art on to their kids, you know, they're playing around the campfire and, you know, then showing them this or showing them that, you know. I mean, Indian music kind of works that way. The music of the sitar is like an apprentice system. They don't actually have written music at all. It actually works, you know, like a master or an apprentice, and he shows there's certain sort of fundamentals that you have to learn, you know.
Cool.
And they get shown that, and then they spend a long, long time trying to master it.
Yeah, it's a never-ending learning process, music as well, hey?
Absolutely. There's always some more stuff.
Yeah. I heard a funny quote on YouTube. It was this really good like metal style player. He could shred with the best of them. And he goes, when he got bored, he went and learned country music because it was more of a challenge. I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Well, that's great. He does that too, you know, because there's so much you can gain from every style.
Yeah.
You know, I just keep looking at stuff all the time and go, oh man, I've got to learn that and I've got to do this. And it's actually trying to bring it back into usable chunks or workable chunks. It's a hard thing sometimes, you know, because there's just so much great stuff that you want to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I was going to ask you as well, do you think learning theory helps or sort of hurts the creative process when you're playing, either in a studio situation or whether or not you're basically playing live? What's your thoughts on
that? Yeah, I think the thing with theory is that I think everyone needs to have a basic knowledge of it. It helps you. When we go back to that sort of idea of learning by ear, if you understand sort of just really basic fundamentals, it really helps to put things in place. And probably simple things like learning tunes and memorizing a lot of tunes. If you realize that the chord structures are very similar, I mean, if someone said, go and learn that, you know, those 50 tunes there, you'd be pretty overwhelmed by that if you didn't understand the thread that hangs things together. So that to me is where the theory comes into it. It's not, you know, having to be able to write symphonies or be able to orchestrate all these great parts or whatever. I mean, that's fantastic for the people that want to do it. But if you're a guitar player, just past beginning stage, I think you need to have a basic understanding of how a chord's built, how a scale's built, how a scale becomes a chord, how a chord becomes a chord progression, basically, you know.
Yeah.
If you've got that knowledge down, For a lot of people, there's not much more that you actually need to know. You know, when you're improvising, it helps to understand a little bit more about chord and scale theory. But you know, it can go too far sometimes too. So I'm a believer in teaching something to somebody that's applied to what they're doing. It's really important.
And yeah, that's a great thing to touch on as well. I think anytime you're learning something, if you can apply it to the style or the type of music you're playing, it obviously makes it a lot easier to learn too, rather than stepping too far outside of outside of the bag that the people want to learn too, I guess. Would that be accurate, I guess?
Yeah, it is, mate. It helps it stick too, you know. If you're learning a concept and not using the concept or applying it, then it'll just go.
Yeah.
Particularly as I'm getting older, my RAM's getting fuller, mate. So the hard drive's getting fuller. I can't keep everything in there. So I've just got to keep in the things that I use.
Mate, you can give me half of that unused bag of chops any day. I'd happily take those. That's. I was going to ask you too. Speaking of what people have learnt over the years and getting in a rut, or maybe getting stuck playing something that's just becomes bad habit kind of playing. I know over the years I've struggled with a lick that I always played wrong, and I really had to just drill it out of me by playing lots of other stuff and I guess making a point to not go anywhere near that lick, which in turn also it helped, but it took a while to get rid of that from my playing. What's your thoughts on breaking bad habits musically?
Yeah, it's for one thing that they can be broken, which is a good thing.
Yeah, thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully. You know, it's all part of the learning process, and like some people have really bad habits with technique. And you don't want to get hung up too much on technique, but the really important thing is that when you play, you should be relaxed. You know, both your hands should stay fairly relaxed. And like I say to some of the beginners here who look like they're doing contortion exercises of some kind, you know, I say relax. I know it's not easy, but I know you're finding it impossible. But that's the thing, is to make sure you relax your hands. And you don't want to be doing damage to yourself. So that's the only thing I'd say with bad technique is you can do damage to your hands. Now, as far as things that you play and changing things that you play, that can take a time to get through your system, but it does go through. It does happen. I know sometimes I get really disappointed. I'll be sitting here working on some stuff and thinking, yeah, I'll go out and have a jam with some guys this week, and I'll bring all that stuff out, and I'm just going to blow them out, and it's going to be fantastic, and then nothing happens. And, and then, you know, 6 months down the track, I'll be playing somewhere, and suddenly these lines start coming out. It's going, okay. So with stuff like that, if you just work it and just give yourself time, it'll flow through your playing, whatever you want to play. But that, more often than not, never comes through straight up. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem to work that way. Maybe I'm just a bit slow, but that's the way it works for me anyway.
No, I'm the same. I'm absolutely the same. And it's interesting that you mentioned being relaxed. I know when I'm playing more live and I'm comfortable and I've been gigging more, or even just practicing a lot at home, on a more of a daily basis, my picking hand, which is my opposite hand from the right-handed players out there, is always loose. And that's when I'm playing my best. Anytime I know I'm grabbing the pick too hard, or I've got my left hand sort of clenched, I play bad. I always play bad. I never feel like I trust in my own playing. And I just, it's about just loosening up. And it makes a big difference to your playing.
It was a mental battle, I think, you know, like a lot of things, you know, human endeavors like sport and things like that as well. You know, if you can just go with the flow a bit and relax through something, you'll perform it a lot better.
Yeah, and I think not having expectations that you're going to play a certain way has helped me a lot. I used to sort of try to, you know, either expect that I play better at certain gigs than others, and in the end, I just thought, let's just see how we go. Like, I try not to anticipate what I'm going to play before the gig actually starts as much as I used to when I was, you know, sort of not gigging as regularly. I just rely on, well, this is the kind of stuff I want to play. But I felt like over the years, you just have to sort of go with the flow a little more. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a real killer when you start trying to pre-guess something you know, in the early days, you know, we're playing quite a bit, and I, funnily enough, I found some of the best gigs I played was when I was ill. And the reason was I was too worried about, you know, trying to, you know, stop my nose from bloody running or something like that, and I wasn't concentrating that much on my playing, but I was just letting the playing happen. Mm-hmm. So I was a lot more relaxed in that and was more worried about, you know, sneezing or something else stupid. So
yeah, there's so many variables that can put you off playing, especially live. It could be, you know, especially if you're singing as well and the PA is not right, or you have to, you're sort of leading the band and you're giving solos around, or someone's playing over the top of you, or, you know, it's not hard to be put off. I think the more you do it, though, the more you become sort of, you know, you adapt to different situations. But I also had a question for you as well. This is the one thing, one of a few things, I guess, that in the early days of watching you play, you taught me sort of inadvertently not to play over people, you know. Yeah. Maybe hold back if you're playing with another guitarist who's doing one thing, find something else that fits, or actually just leave some space. And yeah, what's your thoughts on, you know, jamming and leaving space musically, and what's your thoughts on that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think it's really important to listen to what's going on around you and then find your place in that. Mm-hmm. Too many people are very self-absorbed in what they're playing. Now, if you're playing in a band, it's a group thing. I liken it to, you know, if you listen to...
Hang on. It's not just about the guitar.
No, it's not just about the guitar, mate, at all.
Yeah.
I remember when I was working years ago in Mount Gambier, we used to have a big Saturday night show up there, and one of the songs, to me, the guitar just didn't fit, so I just didn't used to play it. And the guy that was running the band and paying me wanted to cut me some money because he was playing. I said, it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Said,
wow.
The guitarists always want to play. I said, well, not if it doesn't work.
So there's sometimes where, like, what I love doing on a if I'm playing with another guitar player is, if say it's a slow blues, and you know they break it down, it's nice and quiet, and there's another guitar player about to do a solo, I generally won't play for the first 12 or 24 bars.
Yeah,
on rhythm, I'll just leave that out, and when you come back in, all of a sudden it starts going places. It's you know, I think it's a great thing for the ear to not hear everything all of the time.
Music is about space as much as anything, and everyone talks about this, you know, and everyone talks about listening, but very few players do it.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in jam situations, because a lot of those situations the guys are a bit more inexperienced. But even, you know, with players who've been playing a long time, and there's some really great players who I won't mention, they just leave no space whatsoever, you know, and they're shocking, you know. A mate of mine who I will mention who doesn't do this is a guy called Bob Spencer, and Bob's mm-hmm. known for playing in bands like the Angels and sort of heavy stuff, and he'll play loud, but he'll also leave space, you know, which I think is fantastic, because a lot of the sort of louder, harder rock players don't do that.
Yeah, no.
But he does. He does it really well. I play with him back. We haven't played together for quite a while now, but we used to jam a bit back, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a bit longer, and that was always impressed me, that the way he would sort of build up to a level and just drop out, you know, or drop back and then give you space, because, you know, the old saying, it's sort of your turn to shine, or whatever, or time to shine, and you should let that person, your whole thing that you're doing, if you're playing with a singer, your whole point of being is to make that singer better,
mm-hmm.
not for you to show off.
No,
you know, that's it. It's really not. And if you're doing a blues jam and it's your solo, then it's your turn to go for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it just depends on the situation you're in. They're always different. I've got one tonight that I do, which is like a more a recovery sort of thing, and it's about entertainment more than anything.
Yep.
So a couple of times I'll take a bit of guitar stuff and that, but it's more about just keeping the groove going and making sure that the singer is really out there and doing his job and comfortable with it.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to being professional as well, like also having some self-control. And it's hard for some players to be in a situation where, you know, they have to stop playing, or they have to play specific parts. So it's a good lesson in self-control to be in that sort of situation, I guess, as well.
Yeah, it is, and you know, like, we've all got egos, mate. We all like to feel like we're wanted and all that sort of stuff. But sometimes it's just better to back off, and the people that know will know what you're doing, and you know, they'll appreciate it as well.
Yeah, I did a gig recently with Laura Clark as a singer, and we did some old soul covers and, you know, sort of popular soul tunes, all that kind of stuff, a few blues tunes, and it was actually really cool learning tunes and just sort of kicking back and playing, and not having to be the like ripping up guitar solo after guitar solo, and it was actually really cool, and people really dug it. Like, we did it after my three-piece blues set, and yeah, it was actually kind of nice to be in a situation like that, and sort of be part of something greater than, you know, just you know, busting out blues guitar solos. I mean, I love doing that, so don't get me wrong. But yeah, it's
That's
a time
fun,
and a
isn't
place
it?
for everything. Yeah, absolutely.
That's fun doing that stuff. But the song, to me, actually, songs are like things I love the most. You know, people say, well, who's your favorite guitar player? And I can't really name anyone particularly, but I particularly just like songs. I've always liked songs. Yeah, what I consider good songs, you know, what some people consider them, probably they don't, you know, but. You know, but it's more about, you know, people again will say it's about the song, and I really believe in that.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's funny because even though I'm primarily a blues guitarist, the stuff that I listen to doesn't have a lot of. I mean, I listen to a lot of blues guitar music and have over the years, but some of my favorite stuff is like Sam and Dave. Like, I could listen to great stuff like that. Like, you got me onto John Hyatt years ago, who's, you know, who I
Fantastic.
absolutely love. And I mean, he's great at everything that he does as well, that guy. But yeah, absolutely. And I've even noticed that some of the pros, you know, like Robert Cray, those guys have sort of gone away from the big guitar fest, and just that, like, Robert Cray is just doing a whole lot of great tunes. Like, they're really good
He is.
songs, you know. They've got the guitar in there, but it's not the focus of it as much anymore.
I like a lot of the what they call Americana, which is it's kind of on the edge of country music, a bit of soul and blues, a bit all mixed up, you know. People like Rodney Crowell, who's just a great songwriter, who, you know, with one of the things I do, we do a lot of his songs. That just turns out, because they're all just great songs, we just end up doing a few more of them. So, you know, really fantastic words, good melodies, good stories. And I love doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. So I actually have quite a few friends in their 50s or around that age group. Actually, a big part of the demographics on my YouTube channel is between sort of 45 and 60. And a lot of these guys are new to playing as well. I just want to have a chat to you about maybe how you what you've found teaching older players who are new to playing guitar, and maybe a little bit about their progress as well as they develop.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. This, 'cause some of those guys come at it. They played when they were kids, a little bit. Some might not have played at all, or not much at all, but just a little bit. And you'd be surprised at how much the fingers remember. They might not remember a lot, but they actually remember them how to move, and it's sort of a bit of a muscle memory thing. So for a guy that's played a little bit, coming back to it, and a lot of these guys come back to it because they're getting older, but that sort of age group was into a lot of music when they were younger. I mean, now kids have got a lot of things that, you know, that they can focus on, or they probably don't focus on much, but focus on, or they're dispersed across a lot of things. But back when I was growing up, music was a huge thing, and that was, you know, I was talking to a mate last week, you know, on a Monday or Tuesday night, what are we going to do? Oh, let's whip up the prospect, check out a gig, you know, or we'll go here and check out. There was a gig on everywhere that we could go and see every night of the week, and we would, just because that's what you would do. So a lot of these guys will come back, are coming back to the thing and say, well, I wish I had have gone further with the guitar. I wish I had have learned how to play it. And that's terrific. But there is a problem. When you're sort of starting to get older, sort of approaching 50, mid-40s, 50, it's harder to learn than it was when you were a kid. It's physically harder. Your hands don't work as well. That's why I made the point before. The guys that have done it a little bit before, they've got an advantage here. Their hands do sort of know where they're going. It doesn't mean you can't do it, because you can, because I've taught a number of people that do. In fact, one of my mates is playing in town tonight somewhere. He's playing a bluegrass show, you know, singing and playing. And he'll tell me, he will say, if you ever spoke to him, that he can't play, but he actually can. He plays quite well, and he sings quite well. And he just wanted to do it. so he spent his time and practiced and got to a reasonable standard. You know, it's not where he wishes he was. You know, he wishes he played when he was 17 or 16, mm-hmm. whatever. But still, he's playing and he's out there doing some shows and things. You know, he's making up concept sort of ideas and going out with a group of people and having a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, great.
So you can do it. It's just going to be a little bit harder. And don't expect to sort of come out the other end being the next big thing, because that's really just not going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
But you can play and you can have a lot of fun with it. You know, there's a lot of programs. There used to be the Weekend Warriors program around that I had a few mates that got involved in that, and they had a lot of fun. And some of them have still got the bands that they did, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, and they're still out playing parties and doing stuff. So there's a lot of opportunity there for people to do things. But just take your time with it. I think that's the thing I'd say. I'd say to anybody, take your time with it. I had a guy a few years ago come to me. He was retirement age, you know, and he's nearly getting up to his mid-60s, and he'd never touched music before.
Yeah.
And I said to him at the time, this is going to take you a good couple of years, okay? And it did. And eventually, I think I haven't seen him. He's been overseas, and he just found it particularly hard. But he had a go at it. So it's just his hands were, you know, and the muscle memory wasn't going to work, you know?
Yeah, okay.
So for some people that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
For some others, you know, it has pretty good results from a few guys anyway, but they're sort of more starting in their, you know, late 40s, early 50s, you know, and if they're willing to just do a little bit of practice, they'll get through. And, you know, I've had others that have come with great ideas of doing something. They come for 2 weeks and then realize it's kind of hard, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
That's, you know, and that's at any age too, you know. It kind of drives me a bit batty at times,
mm-hmm.
You know, because, as you know, guitar, and anyone listening knows, playing guitar is not easy. It's not something you just pick up and just off you go and start playing it. People don't do that.
No, and a lot of people, this is something that I wanted, that's a great point. And I always wondered, do you think some people are more natural with music? Or say that you get two people at the same age,
yeah.
You know, will someone click with it more than another, or is it just a lot of hard work?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. It's a really great question, and I don't know that you could ever really answer it unless you had, you know, unless you could match some people up and then follow them through the whole life and just see where they got to and made them mm-hmm. practice exactly the same and do all the same stuff. But I think some people have aptitude. Some people really struggle with rhythm and things anyway. They just don't have a sense of that.
Yeah.
Some people will tell me that they're tone deaf, but tone deaf, there's not very many tone deaf people as a percentage of population. True tone deafness means basically you wouldn't like music in the first place because mm-hmm. you just hear it as a bunch of jangled sounds.
Okay? Yeah.
It just makes no sense. It doesn't relate to you at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what tone deaf is. Other than that, you're not tone deaf. You might struggle to get pitch a bit, you know, and some people can sing in key better and tune better than others. And
yeah.
But
I heard it was something also similar to vocalists who can't change their vocal, say, from like a C to a C sharp, or they're not aware of the steps in the, like that sort of like a half step up on a fretboard or a step up on a fretboard. They have trouble sort of deciphering that musically.
Yeah, some people do. That's true. But they, you know, there's a few guys I've taught that have had a bit more trouble finding that their way through those sort of things. But you know, they're still out there playing okay, you know.
Cool.
Getting back to the topic there, or what you asked, some people seem to have an aptitude, or sometimes that aptitude is more that they just have at an early age, they just feel that they want to play the guitar and keep picking it up, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a big bonus. Some, you know, like for the rest of us, we'll want to run out and kick a football around or jump on a skateboard or whatever else. But these guys sort of want to, like Tommy Emmanuel's a really good example. You know, Tom from an early age just had some sort of affinity with the guitar that he wanted to pick it up and play it all the time.
Yeah.
But on the other side of that, Tom will tell you he's a natural, but it took him about 10 or 12 hours a day to be one.
Yeah, that's it. It's a 10,000-hour rule, they say. You know, you put 10,000 hours into anything and you're going to be pretty competent.
Yeah, I don't know who measures that sort of time, but truly, you know, the thing is that...
it's like 20 years or something, basically.
Is that right?
Yeah, something like that anyway.
Yeah, like in his case and other people's, you know, cases, It looks easy when they're doing it, and it looks amazing, but there's a hell of a lot of work that's gone in the background to get to that stage, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I
Yeah, I
know the
mean.
amount of time that I put into playing, and I know the amount of time other guys put in there. They're playing a lot, you know, and trying to keep your chops up or trying to learn new things. There's a lot of work that goes into to just getting out there and playing. And as the guy I was telling you about before that's playing, right, Rod, who's a mate of mine, he used to always love watching music and stuff like that. And it wasn't until he started picking the guitar up and learning it, he said, "I never realized how hard this was." He said, "I've got a newfound respect for guitar players."
Do you also think that it helps if you already know like what you want to play? I know when I first started listening to guitar vocal music, like Dire Straits and Clapton and all the guys back in the day, even John Lee Hooker stuff to some extent as well, I kind of thought, well, if I'm going to play guitar, I want it to be along these lines. This is kind of a good starting point, and you know, it made it easier for me to maybe learn. Do you find having a specific type of idea about how you either want to sound or the kind of stuff you want to play before you, you know, before you either get lessons or before you look into it more? Does that help the learning process in your opinion?
I think having a focus helps anything. But I'm probably guilty of the other a little bit. I can be a little bit too unfocused at times, you know, because there's just so much stuff. I'll listen to that and I'll jump into this and that. And at times I wish I was a bit more focused on something. And every time I decide to be, I change my mind the next hour.
Yeah.
But
I'm the same. I think some days I'm like, you know what, I just want to completely reinvent my style. So I start trying to learn all these new things and, you know, it always ends up back pretty much where it was with just maybe 5 seconds worth of new stuff.
and I think what you just touched on there is something else I wouldn't mind discussing, which is just that idea of a foundation, of having a foundation for what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I liken it to, you know, you've got a basic concept of how you play guitar. And all you're doing is, it's like a circle, all you're doing is just making that circle a little bit bigger each time, you know. Well, not each time you practice, but as you're adding stuff to it over the years of practice.
Yep.
You know, and so for a guy, if I'm teaching somebody that's been playing for a long time, all I'm trying to do is just help them grow their circle a little bit more.
Yep.
You know, and just assist them along that path. You know, it's not about totally changing everything that they do or anything like that. It's just, you know, bringing in new concepts, but they've got to be part of it, your overall feel or your concept. Otherwise, if it's not, it just doesn't stick.
Yeah. So which ways do you sort of approach like learning new ideas or opening someone up to a new, you know, style or adding something to their bag? How would you approach that? If you were teaching somebody, for example?
The first thing I do, if someone's a player already, I just get them to play for me, and I don't care if they're playing well or not. I just want to see how their hands move, what they do, and what they're about. And I also then want to talk to them about what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve. And it really just goes from there, mate. It's what they're trying to get to that's important, and then we can just start moving down the path of helping them get there. It's just assisting, because I think another key concept is that really we all teach ourselves.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, so if someone's teaching you or helping you, they're just helping you to teach yourself better. Because if someone's just throwing information at you all the time and saying, do this, do this, do that, it's not going to be that helpful.
Yeah.
Particularly if you've been playing for a while. So it's more important that you get this, you know, that then you go and use that stuff and play around with it and come up with new ideas of whatever it is that we're working on at the time. So the idea of self-learning is really, really important.
Yeah, great. Cool. So thanks for having a chat to us today, Ross. I really appreciate you being on.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It was good to have a chat.
Yeah, it really, it's good to sort of throw these ideas around and get other people's opinions on it. So hopefully it's been helpful for everybody listening. And if you want to point people to your website, feel free to – what was your link again?
Yeah, it's www.rosshelmot, that's helmot.com.au. I think .com will get you there as well.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Cool. Just on an outro on this too, mate, we're talking about ideas. Remember, ideas are always fluid. So what we're talking about today, we might have a different opinion tomorrow as things grow. So
it's a bit like the overdrive pedal thing. It's the best one of the week.
It's the best one of the week.
Yeah.
At the moment. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me along today, Shane. It was terrific.
No worries. I appreciate your time. And yeah, if people want to find out more about you, definitely check all the links. If you're watching on YouTube, definitely check out the links in the description of the videos as well. And it'll also be posted up at guitarpedaldemos.com as well. So thanks again, Ross.
Cheers, mate.
A huge thanks again to Ross Helmont for joining me. And if you'd like to be a guest on my podcast, feel free to comment either on YouTube or get in touch with me either via intheblues.com.au or via guitarpedaldemos.com. Or you can reach me on Facebook at facebook.com/intheblues. And the last one is Twitter at guitarpedaldemo. So that's D-E-M-O, no S on the end or anything like that. It didn't fit. So, yeah, feel free to reach out to me any way you like and feel free to comment. And if you have anything you'd like me to add to a future podcast, absolutely let me know and I will add it in as soon as possible. I do have a few other subjects that I'm dying to talk about with a few other people, which are now booked, as well as some gear and product guys as well who make some really cool stuff. So, yeah, it should be interesting times on the podcast ahead. Thank you again for everybody's support. I really appreciate it. And if you're watching on YouTube, feel free to comment below. And I will speak to you all very, very soon. Thanks for listening. See ya.